When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White. Dylan is back on his NFBC grind. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. He's doing a very early 2025 draft, Champions Draft, just about at the halfway point at this point in time as we're recording. I'm kind of interested to dive into it. But Dylan, before we get into that, have you been watching any playoff baseball, enjoying any of these games? What are your thoughts?
I've been really enjoying the Cleveland game with the Young Kensie Noel home run and the David Fry walk-off and all that, the drama and the Soto walk-off win. All that was extremely exciting. I was hoping for Cleveland. I think a Yankees-Dodgers World Series is, Clash of the Titans, probably the MVP, the AL against the MVP, the NL. These are the big teams, really, I think. Coming into the year, we would have not been surprised if we said the Dodgers come out of the NL or the Yankees come out of the AL, and now they're facing each other. So,
Before you go on,
yes,
we're actually the two people on staff in our off-season picks that picked Yankees versus Dodgers. And we both have the Dodgers winning. I have the Dodgers in 5. You have the Dodgers in 6. So we're actually the only people on staff that picked this. So cheers to the Robo Scout and the fantasy team there.
No one should be surprised.
Yeah, we took the highest probability outcome, and it happened.
You had the Royals, I think, too, as an up and coming team. I think I had the Tigers. We had some pretty good.
Yeah, we had some good ones, and I think I had Ohtani as NL MVP.
There you go.
So, I don't know what I had for AL. It might have been Judge, or Bobby Witt. I think I went somewhere along those lines. I don't think it was Mike Trout. So those days have flown. I don't think I did as well on my Cy Young picks, though. I don't think they were good. I'd have to go back and check, but you don't want to hear about that. It's true. I think this World Series is a great matchup. It's also, I believe, will be the first time if Ohtani and Judge win the MVPs, as we're anticipating they will, be the first time since 2012 that's happened, when it was Tigers versus Giants, Buster Posey, Miguel Cabrera. It's happened 5 other times. So this would be the 7th, 6th since the integration period, the expansion period in 1969. Canseco and Kirk Gibson in 1988. Okay. George Brett and Mike Schmidt in 1980. Joe Morgan and Thurman Munson in 1976. Fred Lynn and Joe Morgan in 1975. Boog Powell and Johnny Bench in 1970. So it hasn't happened that frequently. And frankly, it happened a lot in the first 10 years post expansion. Since 1980, in my lifetime, this would be the 3rd time it's happened. Wow. And I'm going to be 43 in February. So it's unusual. Now, this will also be the 6th World Series between each league's home run hitters. This has happened even less frequently over the last 70 years. The last time this happened, Dylan, you want to take a guess?
1927.
Well, it's not that. No, 1956, Mickey Mantle and Duke Schneider.
Okay.
1937, it happened with Joe DiMaggio and Mel Ott. 1936, it happened with Lou Gehrig and Mel Ott. 1928, Babe Ruth and the infamous Jim Bottomley. And 1921, Babe Ruth and George Kelly. So, like, that almost never happens.
Hmm.
The MVP thing is very rare, particularly in the expanded playoff, you know, setup and all that we've seen. Yeah, it's and also here's a list of players who won MVP in World Series. By the way, it was Sarah Langs that tweeted all this out last night, and I kind of copied it down for something else that I'm working on. So shout out to Sarah Lang, and I believe Elias Sports might have tipped her off on some of this. World Series and MVP in the same season. It's happened 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 times since 1970. It will probably happen this year because we're going to have an MVP probably on both sides.
Right.
Mookie in 2018, Jose Altuve in 17, Chris Bryant in 16, whoa, Buster Posey in 2012, Kurt Gibson in 88, Willie Henderson in, Willie Hernandez, 1984, Cal Ripken Jr. 83, Mike Schmidt in 80, Willie Stargell in 79, Joe Morgan in 76 and 75, Reggie Jackson in 1973, and Boog Powell in 1970. So, like, you're among very lofty company at this point with some of the achievements. And I think just some of the setups for this World Series in terms of prolific home run hitters, MVP, so the best player in their respective leagues in that respective season. And, you know, I think it's, one seed versus one seed. So we have the two best teams meeting each other. It's pretty exciting, I think, overall to also think of, you know, what Ohtani could do in a series like this. Mookie back in the World Series again, Soto back in the World Series again, Judge in his first World Series. So there's a lot of like storylines going on here. I think, you know, very talented teams up and down, both very deep teams, deep lineups that can do a lot of damage from 1 through 9, or maybe 1 through 8 for the Yankees. But I think it's a really exciting World Series, frankly. So I'm pretty jacked up for it. Any other storylines or anything else over the last weekend or playoff games that you've kind of been stewing on?
Well, I am predicting that Ohtani comes and pitches in the 9th inning of game 7 and strikes out Soto and Judge.
I don't think, you know, as much as we want that to happen, like that's the fairy tale ending, the Dodgers winning it all, and the Shohei Ohtani movie, right? The montage goes after that with all his awards and all things that happen. I don't think we're going to see that. Just my feeling.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, I think they pretty much ruled it out
already. It would be amazing if that happened, though.
It would just prove it's a simulation we're in right now.
Yeah, well, I suppose it is. All right, well, I think that's enough in the playoffs. We don't have a whole lot going on here. We got the Arizona Fall League. Another week in the books. Jose Briseño, I think, is one of the big breakouts. Obviously, Zaire Hope. Those are kind of the two names from a fantasy perspective that I think have a lot of helium as we sort of head into the next half of this short AFL season. I know RoboScouts like Briseño for a while. I think we both agree on Zaire Hope and some of the underlying data. How are you valuing those guys kind of going into next season?
I think Zaire Hope is probably going to be in our preseason fantasy prospect list in the top 50 for sure, maybe even higher. I mean, if he continues doing what he's doing in the AFL, it's just from a perceived value standpoint, he's just going to be so sought after that you almost have to move him up. But like you said, the data has just been so outstanding, athleticism's great, etc. Briseño, I mean, there's such an influx of good young catchers. not to kind of spoil the lead or whatever, but I'm in a DC right now, we said, and like just looking at some of the late options of good catchers like Augustin Ramirez, Adrian Del Castillo, Dylan Dingler, Samuel Basayo, Dalton Rushing, Edgar Caro, like all these guys, Jefferson Caro will get playing time. They probably will all get 300 play appearances. And that's just guys this year in redraft. So then you have the next influx of catchers that you're mentioning, Josue Briseño, et cetera. So I don't know if it's going to move him up that much. I think he gets a mulligan for this year. He was a sort of a consensus sleeper for us, both of us coming in just because the data was so good. He battled some injuries. I think it was like a knee injury maybe. And kind of had a slow season this year. But, you know, it's just like a pause. And so I think, you know, we had him probably in our like top 200, and he's going to be in the top 200, maybe closer to the 100s now.
Yeah. I think he's, justified maybe some of his offseason rankings and excitement.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, over the last couple of weeks here. And I think the selling point remains the same, and it's kind of on display, and that's just really easy power without having to sacrifice quality. You know, consistent contact quality, or even swing decisions. You know, it's a pretty, you know, well manicured hitting profile. Mm-hmm. I think he probably ends up at first base, but I do think that he has kind of the carrying tools and balance of plate skills and power that's kind of necessary to hack it as a first base only prospect. So I'm kind of in on Briseño a little bit, but I don't think, as you said, I don't think it's really changed our outlook. I think it's just more like justified our belief in him this offseason. So totally agree with you there. Why don't we take a quick break here? When we come back, we will talk about that draft Champions League that Dylan's in the middle of.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
All right, and we're back. Dylan, as we mentioned in the top of the show, you're doing your first 2025 draft, correct?
Yes. Correct.
It's a draft champion setup, which is a draft and hold league. This is a 150 or
150.
So 150, kind of your standard fare. This is the league that I was talking about, similar setup. So kind of standard roto lineups, but it's draft and hold. So you draft 50 players, full roster, and you can't make any moves throughout the season. So that depth that you draft on the bench is super important. So I guess kind of my first question here as we jump into it, what's sort of your, we'll say, foundational approach to building the team in the early rounds? What are you trying to come away with? Are there some do's and don'ts? Walk me through the first couple picks.
I'll even go before that. So basically my prep is, you know, you take projections. There aren't any public projections out right now, except Steamer 600. So you kind of have to apply what you think are plate appearances, and then you kind of get an idea of kind of the player pool. Because there aren't any draft, this is like the fifth draft that's been in the books for NFBC. Like when we started, there was only one completed draft. So the ADP was for one draft. So you don't really have an idea of the market. So for that reason, my draft strategy of kind of like finding the pockets where, you know, you find a guy who is like a 12th round value, but he's being taken with the ADP at like the 18th. And so like, that's a target for me. That kind of goes out the window because that ADP, that market hasn't kind of been solidified yet. So for that reason, for KDS, which is like choosing where in the draft order you want to be, I had number 8 right in the middle as my number 1 pick, so that you kind of get an idea that that's where you pick off the values. If you're at one of the ends, one of the turns, you don't really know yet what, like who the values are. Like you don't want to take two pitchers and it comes back to you and then you're like, oh yeah, there are a lot of pitchers here. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. So it kind of
hedges and you get to pick off values. I mean, that was the plan. And then what happens later on is as ADP comes, people in the middle are trying to do that same thing and you can't pick them off because the guy to your left or your right is trying to do the same thing. so I kind of like want the turn because then you can kind of craft your own team at that point. So yeah, long story short, that was the plan, is get in the middle, and I ended up getting at number 8. I didn't even win. It was my first choice. I wasn't even like the person who got their first choice. I was the 7th in the order, and I still got that because no one wanted that. So the idea is my general DC strategy, although I've only done 2 in my life last year. You want balance as much as you can because you always want a shot at the overall. You can't really punt like saves or steals. And I like to get guys who are generally balanced going in. So I don't want to get like the, like Dyron Blancos or whatever, or Bryce Terangs who have, like 50 stolen bases, but not that much else.
Yeah.
Because if they get injured, then you're kind of out. But if you take all these guys who are like 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases, like the Ian Haps or whatever, like a whole bunch of Ian Haps, you know, you can weather injuries a little better. It doesn't kind of upset the balance. And then the other thing I do is obviously as you're getting to like the 15th, 16th rounds, it starts getting thinner and you have to start like you can't get full-time at bat guys. You can only get like platoon guys.
Sure.
But I like to make sure I get as many of the guys who are like full-time playing time as much as possible just to establish that. And then of course, take some shots at rookies and all that.
Yeah. But before we even get into some of the later rounds, so how did you sort of build out the base of the team in terms of your first 6 picks here?
Yeah, so when I looked at the landscape of the player pool, Jose Ramirez at third base is kind of a step above because of his like 30-30 or 40-40 capability. He's a step above like the next tier of like Rafael Devers, Austin Riley, Manny Machado. So I was kind of hoping that he would come to me because I like taking guys who are like have gaps between them and like the next tier below them. Jose Ramirez went early. He went in the top 5, so I didn't get a chance. From my valuations, interestingly enough, the number one player, valued player is Paul Skeens. I had an opportunity to take him at number 8. I just felt that it was a bit too risky. That's not really my style to take someone like that, who of course can be incredible and projections view him to be incredible, but I just didn't want to do that. So I went with Gunnar Henderson. So he had 30 plus home runs last year and like 17 stolen bases. So he kind of does that balance. Kyle Tucker was my second choice. After Jose Ramirez, he went right before me. And he's another power speed guy. Like basically you want power speed and then like some aces. And I like to get closers as well, kind of the top 5, like surefire closers, quote unquote.
Yeah. I think, you know, that all makes a lot of sense, especially like trying to get saves, but also looking at the positional gap. So you went Gunnar Henderson 1. I understand that with Skeens. For what it's worth, Skeens is the first pitcher off the board. Was off the board before Tarek Skubal. This is a single season league. This is not a redraft league. So he's being valued, and I would say this is probably going to be somewhat of a debate this offseason. I'm sure that Skubal will have his defenders, but Skeens is 1-2 in terms of the pitchers. So I think that says quite a bit. This is a batting average league, correct? Not an on-base percentage league?
Correct.
So it comes back to you in the second round. You go with Bryce Harper there. Talk me through that versus, you know, Devers, Kettle Marte, Freddie Freeman, Trey Turner, William Contreras, you know, Corey Seager, Jackson Merrill, just a couple of names that went after Harper.
Yeah, that was kind of a tough one. It was getting thin. So I didn't go with the top 3 pitchers. Like I said, Skeens, Skubal, Wheeler are kind of been the top 3 pitchers in most leagues right now. And then it kind of drops down to like Sale and then Kirby and Gilbert. And I'm not in love with taking Gilbert or Kirby.
Yeah.
Sale scary as incredible as he was. Then you get, you know, like guys like Cole Reagans, Garrett Cole, Corbin Burns, maybe DeGrom, maybe Cease. It's like, I don't know, like they all kind of have warts. So I just kind of wanted something solid. So I was thinking either Ketel Marte, because there is a drop between him and Altuve, according to my evaluations. I already had Gunner, so I didn't want, I couldn't take a shortstop really. Although there are a lot of good shortstop values, kind of made me kind of not regret taking Gunner, but sort of like question whether I would do that if that happened again. So I just went solid. I went Bryce Harper. It was between Bryce Harper and Freddie Freeman. And I just went with Harper. He was kind of battling some injuries. I know Freeman was at the end too.
Sure.
But I'm expecting a big bounce back from Bryce Harper. And I like the idea of having Henderson and Harper.
So it rolls back to you in the third round. You go with Austin Riley. And in a lot of ways, I think, you know, if Riley is healthy, may go earlier. His production won't be all that different from Devers or Jazz Chisholm, who are two third basemen that went ahead of him.
Yeah. And I'm hoping for a bounce back. You know, this is the lost season for the Braves. Acuña will be back, presumably. Stride will be back. It'll just be like, it'll be a love fest for the Braves. And so I expect, you know, Olson will bounce back from his kind of poor season. Albies hopefully will be healthy too, that it's just going to be like back to 2 years ago Braves. And so I was kind of capitalizing on that. So that's actually a theme that's going to come up later, because my seventh pick is a pitcher, and I'm trying to capitalize off that same thing.
All right. So you start to go a little pitching heavy over the next couple of rounds. Next two rounds, you go pitcher. You go Mason Miller in the fourth round, and then Yamamoto in the fifth. Talk to me a little bit about those picks, particularly the Miller one. Garrett Cole goes, what, a couple picks before that. Edwin Diaz goes a few picks before that. You had guys like Framber Valdez, Ryan Helsley, Jacob deGrom, Dylan Cease, Felix Bautista, Blake Snell, and Garrett Crochet, all potential options.
Yeah, so at the third pick, I was considering Crochet because I really like Crochet this year. He surprised me. And I thought maybe I will – it's too risky to take him, so that's why I went with Riley. I wanted Edwin Diaz in the fourth. I had already kind of decided I was going to go with Edwin Diaz. He had been going late in the back end of the fourth in that draft. And I've been talking to a guy, Andrew McQuiston. He's in a draft and he went later as well. So I thought I'm going to get Edwin in the fourth. And then Class A, Devin Williams, Edwin Diaz all went well before I thought. And so I got stuck. And it was either Housley, because I want a closer. I want a quote-unquote established closer. I don't want someone like Ryan Walker, who may lose the job at San Fran. Like, that's the worst thing that can happen, especially in these early drafts. You want to get guys who are probably going to be the closer. Sure. And instead of Ryan Helsley, who is going to be the closer, I went with Mason Miller, who may be traded. But Mason Miller I had like on so many teams last year, and he was so great.
Sure. And the caper nine.
Exactly. So even if he's not the closer, I think he's going to get 15 saves, even if he gets traded to some other team. I don't think they're going to move him as a starter. And even if they do, you know, hopefully he'll be Crochet. So I went with Mason Miller just because the ratios are so good. And then I went with Yamamoto, who I thought being in the fifth, I thought that was a bit late. He was going, like, we took him in the third last year.
Yeah.
And he kind of did what we wanted him to do, except for a bit of a blip in August, September with an injury. But it seems like he's back. He was lights out in the NLCS. And so, you know, if I could get Yamamoto, who was a third round and did what we wanted him to do, so he should be a third round again. He's on the Dodgers, who are going to be presumably a powerhouse next year as well. Then I just went with Yamamoto.
All right. Yeah. And I was going to say other options at that point went a couple picks after him, a lot of pitchers in this round. You take Yamamoto, Imanaga goes next pick. Luis Castillo goes the pick after that. Aaron Nola the pick after that. And then Michael King. Just looking at it myself, of course, this is heavily second half focused. I would take King over the three pitchers that went ahead of him. And I think there's a very realistic debate that I would rather have King than Yamamoto. I don't know. How hot of a take is that?
I wouldn't, but he went in the fifth round here. So, like, a lot of people think he would. I mean, he was dominant in the last couple months and in the playoffs. He definitely deserves it. I was shocked when I saw his final numbers. I didn't have him anywhere because I these guys who are like converted.
He was awesome. And I honestly think just like health, age, physique wise mix, I think I like him more than Imanaga. He was better than Luis Castillo. And I like him more than Aaron Noah. Castillo was really not. This was a pretty down year for Luis Castillo, you know, overall. So some concerns there. And then we'll talk about your sixth round pick. You take your first catcher. This is a two catcher format for those that are listening. Take Salvi Perez. If I count correctly, he was the fourth catcher off the board, right? Rushman, yes. Yainer Diaz, William Contreras. I don't think I'm missing anybody.
Rutschman.
I said Rutschman, Yainer Diaz, William Contreras. So Salvi Perez, in a non-OBP league, get some batting average, you get power, you get counting stats. It's a really good pick. I just wanted to put that out there as like a format dependent sort of thing. I think you can argue him over Adley Rutschman based on what the production's been in this format. Am I wrong? And probably Yainer Diaz, a very similar style hitters.
Yeah, I think he projects better than Rutschman. Yainer Diaz projects well. He got like almost 600 plate appearances, Yainer Diaz, and he like that's huge as catcher. So I probably would have gone Adley just for the upside potential. But I was very happy with Sal Perez. The next two catchers were Will Smith of the Dodgers, obviously, and Wilson Contreras. I like both of them, but I think Sal is a step above. And I definitely don't like chasing catchers. In a couple leagues, I usually don't do that, but in a couple leagues, I was forced to, and I did not enjoy that at all. So, like, as much as I like having an early closer, I like having an early stud catcher as well, so I can just kind of pick and choose. And like I said at the top, there are a lot of young catchers in the later rounds who I don't mind taking shots at. So.
Yeah, I honestly, like, one of my strategies with DCs the last couple of years, and I've cashed in both, is like my last five rounds, I might take like three or four catchers just to have the depth because you have to fill the position twice and there's not that many guys. You take some upside names and it can work, you know? Yeah. Especially if you miss out on some of the top guys and you end up with that mid tier, you could sometimes find some interesting players. William Contreras is actually one that I took 3 years ago, using this strategy. So I've kind of stuck with it. You know, Austin Wells is one that was on a team this year that I got, you know, pretty late in drafts, and then was usable down the stretch. You know, it's all about having guys you can cycle in and out. That's the biggest thing with this format for sure. All right, so let's go to your seventh round pick, Spencer Schwellenbeck. We talked about this a little bit before. Talk to me about why you like old Schwelly.
I just love the skills. I love the shape of his pitches. He's got a wide arsenal, that love fest that's going to be the Braves in 2025. He's just going to capitalize on that. It was Schwellenbach, Bybee, or Glasnow is who I was torn between. I was definitely taking a pitcher. And when I compared Bybee to Schwellenbach, there's a lot of similarities. I just saw very similar underlying metrics, and I felt that Schwellenbach had higher upside than Bybee. Just like if he takes, like, we haven't seen a full season from Schwellenbach, and so like the world's his oyster kind of thing. He has a very high, potentially high ceiling, also a very low floor. And so I think between Schwellenbach and Bobby, I went with Schwellenbach. And then with Glasnow, we know what Glasnow is, but we also know the risks associated with him. And I just didn't want to do that after taking Yamamoto, that it just felt a bit scary to pair the two. So as weird as that sounds, I thought Schwellenbach was a safer pick than Glasnow. I wanted just to plant my flag. This is my first DC of maybe a few. And so I just wanted to make sure I got Schwellenbach. And so I just took the shot.
Yeah, and I'll say next couple rounds, 8, 9, 10. Love what you did here. Carlos Rodon. I think that's great value on Rodon, especially if he pitches up to his potential. And I think in some ways it's kind of like Tyler Glass now. You know, you take some risks there that maybe you'll have a spell during the season where you don't want to start him for a few weeks. But overall, I think the numbers are there. Randy Arozarena, who was really good after the trade, and was actually really just good right before the trade. Stephen Kwan, who had a really good season and provides, you know, floor with counting stats and batting average, of course. I thought that 8, 9, 10, really nice, especially when you consider the type of seasons that Kwan and Arozarena had for periods of time.
Yeah, I wanted another pitcher. I had my eye on Rodon. He fell to me, and so I took him. I had him everywhere last year. He was a bit dicey, but he got stronger as the season went on. Like his Z contact and O swing and all that kind of improved. His velo never really sagged at all. And he's been pretty good in the playoffs as well. So I'm like, he's kind of back, going to play for the Yankees. So that's always good for wins, etc. So I was happy about Rodon. And at this point I need an outfielder now in the ninth. I got my closer. I got my solid catcher. I have good balance on hitting and pitching, and so now I need some outfielders because it's now the ninth. I was actually thinking of Jason Dominguez. It was literally a choice between Jason Dominguez and Randy Arozarena. And I decided to go with Randy Arozarena. I felt he was safer, sort of a 2020, whereas Dominguez has the 2020 or more, but also he may not play for the first half of the season or whatever. His defense has been bad as well, so who knows what the Yankees will do. So I took Arozarena, and then I wanted one of my strategies going into this draft was also to focus on batting average. Because I think what happens as the season goes on and you're like plugging and playing, you can't like target batting average anymore. You're playing what you got. And so if you just go heavy on batting average, but like no power, for example, you can fight for power. You can just put in the power guys. And as long as you have the base. So I went with Stephen Kwan, to long story short, in the 10th. And then funnily enough, in the 11th, Jason Dominguez was still available. So I took him. So I went three outfielders in a row, 9, 10, 11. And I was happy about that.
Yeah. And I think you have the power in the early rounds with Henderson, Harper, Riley, Perez in particular, and then, you know, Arozarena to an extent. To really kind of cover some of the deficiencies with the home run totals with Kwan, while making up for some batting average fluctuation that could happen with any of those guys. And we won't talk about the whole team. I don't think we need to. You're sort of a little bit deeper now. What was the last pick that you made?
My last pick was Nate Lowe, but just before that, I took Kumar Rocker in the 19th round. I'm sure people are interested where some of these rookie guys are going. So I'm hoping, I'm not even really counting on him to be like the fifth starter or to play the whole season. I'm just counting on 100 innings. And even at that, I thought
I think he might be in the rotation.
Say again, sorry.
I said I really do think he might be in the rotation.
Yeah, I think so too. And so I'm very happy with this pick because just based
he's
on
helping now, they're going to ride it as long as they can.
Yeah, why not?
You know. I kind of feel like that was a really interesting pick. So glad you brought that one up. What does the pitching staff look like right now?
So just to recap, Miller, Yamamoto, Schwellenbach, Rodon were my first four. And then I didn't pick for a while and I needed a second closer. So I took Ben Joyce, who, missed the end of the season with a shoulder thing, but everything seems to point to health. He was the closer until the injury. And he was kind of the last like full-time closer, surefire closer that was left. So I took him in the 14th. Then I just went with like Eovaldi and Darvish, guys who are like Eovaldi, you know, solid just to kind of rock, hold it down. Darvish, iffy, but I'm only counting on 120 innings and he's still kind of projected well. Padres are good. And then Kumar Rocker. So I'm only missing one starter like of my nine. I'm going to go heavy pitchers near the end, RoboScout and all our fantasy insights of like guys to take shots at the end, like Will Warren or Casey Hunt, guys like that. I'm going to start populating with those guys.
I think when this draft is done, it would be interesting for you to sort of write up and maybe share your draft board, you know, even if it's just your 50 picks. I think that would be interesting to readers, because I found it very interesting talking through this with you, especially without working with the guardrails of sort of the public, you know, consumption of projections at a certain point really saturates the market and ADPs and influences all that. And you don't have ADP data from, you know, kind of being able to find your pockets, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
And some of that with just such few drafts. So I thought it was interesting to kind of walk through your logic and why you did what you did. But Dylan, thank you for your time once again. We're going to keep on rolling out fantasy content. We're going to start positional rankings sometime next month. So that's coming up shortly. Be on the lookout and enjoy the World Series. Until we meet again, we may have a champion, we may not. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. For Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.